And I want to first thank all the candidates for their willingness to serve our community. We have 5 candidates for 3 open seats. As a reminder, all of the questions have been submitted by members of the community. Some are standard for those of you that have done these forums before, and some are not, but this is the way we'll do it. Our 5 candidates in alphabetical order are Nicole Anderson, Stephen Bradford, Ali Ginter, Tom Hewitt, and Keenan Sanderson. So typically, if we were in person, everyone would be seated at the table and we could visually skip around and start with the new person. So we'll start with an alphabetical order. The first question will be 3 minutes for an answer and to be followed by 4 questions with 2 minutes allowed for the answer. The ever gracious Catherine Tatsuda from TFCU. Yeah, I see you've changed or renamed your screen, the timer. And as opposed to colored cards, like we usually use in person, she's going to be going like this to let our candidates know that they've gone through half of their time or your time is up. But we'll try and be a little more liberal because this is, again, something that we've never done before. So I'll kick it off with Nicole. And the first question is, why are you running for school board? And if you're elected, what will be your top priorities?
Thank you, Michelle. I am running for a second term on the school board. I am finishing my first term, which was a 1-year term this year. And I just feel that the work we're doing is really important. It's valuable to our community, our schools. I have 3 children myself in our school district. This year is a little bit new for me. I have 1 in each level, both elementary, middle, and high school. So I have a neat perspective in that respect. So my number one reason, I think, that really prompted me, well, I shouldn't say my number one, but one of the big reasons is we started our superintendent search last year, or this year, I should say, and didn't complete that. And I would really like to be a part of that process. We did a lot of groundwork, a lot of legwork, and got pretty far with it. So I would really like to be a part of that completion. And then the other thing is keeping our kids safe and in school through this COVID pandemic we're all experiencing. Obviously, it's something that we've got to recognize will be around. And so being a part of the voice for parents in that respect is important to me, which is also one of the reasons I ran last year. So this is home for me, and it's the school district that I was raised through. I got my education here, and I'd like to make sure that it's the best opportunity for my 3 children. So thank you. Oh, you're muted.
Of course, I was following my own rules there. Okay, so next up, we'll hear from Stephen Bradford.
Thank you, Michelle.
Can I say something really fast? Sure. So the first one I'm going to do is going to be your halfway mark. So, Nicole, you did not have to stop if you didn't want to. So I'm going to give you a big thing when you're halfway through. Do it again at the end, okay? So just don't be confused. Thank you.
All right, well, I'm Stephen Bradford, and if my name sounds familiar to you, it might be because I have previously served for 5 years on the school board, and then I left the school board to go serve 3 years on the borough assembly. So I've had quite a few years of experience in local government, and the schools, I think, are one of the most important things about a community. They're certainly important to me. I've raised 7 children. 4 of which will eventually be K-High grads because I still have 2 in the schools, 1 a senior and then a sophomore as well. I think my experience on the school board previously and certainly my experience serving on the borough assembly gives me an ability to understand the process. I will be able to jump right in from day 1 and actively be seeking to work on the considerable problems that this school district faces. And we need to keep in mind that there are many issues that the school district is facing, not just COVID, but we also need to be mindful of the fact that we are having some funding difficulties as we approach the cap. But also importantly with regard to funding is our capital improvement plan. It has not had a lot of attention over recent years, and we certainly have some capital improvements that are necessary, and we need to figure out how to prioritize those and get those in line to be funded, hopefully with some state monies. But if not, we need to start thinking about other aspects. So I think my experience over the years has been helpful, and I'm excited about the opportunity to serve the community again. And so I ask for your vote. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Moving on, Allie Ginter.
Last year I ran for the school board and I missed out by about 90 votes. And I decided I wanted to run because we, the parent community, felt like we weren't being heard. And I suppose I kind of still want, I feel that way in some aspects. But I also want, I would like to be placed on the board to work towards having more of our Native culture implemented into the school curriculum. I know that's been a goal, but I don't think we've seen much of that lately. I myself have three, I will have four children in the district. I have one in middle school, and I have one in elementary school, and I'll have another one next year in preschool. So I have a pretty vested interest in the school district right now. I grew up in Ketchikan. I went through elementary, middle school, and high school through here. I know a majority of the teachers either from working in their classrooms with my previous work experience or being a student of theirs myself. That's pretty much it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. Moving on, Tom Hewitt, you're up.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name's Tom Hewitt. I've previously served two appointed seats on the school board, each one lasting the better part of the year, filling in when somebody vacated the seat. I'm running for school board for, I started getting involved in local education when my daughter was in kindergarten at Ketchikan Charter School. I served on PTAs as secretary and then president through her elementary and middle school years. So that's kind of how I got involved in education. I started on this path to get to know the schools better and to help the people who are educating my daughter. I'm continuing on because my belief that and the necessity of public education system that provides opportunity for our children and to grow as people and have good lives. My initial passion was for academics. And, you know, like I feel like great literature is something that enriches our soul and makes us better people. But then, and you know, math, sciences, arts, that kind of stuff. But then once I was on the school board, I realized so much more that the school system provide. It's an anchor, a bedrock for our whole community. This was seen when it came really into the forefront when we shut down operations early on in the pandemic, and we saw a lot of the negative effects of that on our kids and our community. So as far as what I'd like to see, I'd like to help create a space where people aren't as afraid to speak up. You know, if you write a letter to the school board, you should be heard. If you show up and speak at the school board, you should most definitely be heard. And I've always felt like it's just really important to keep that transparency and openness in our district. We have a lot of challenges ahead of us. We continue to have the issues of safety for our kids and for our community because of the pandemic, which is spiking in our community right now. The superintendent search, a very important position, and sets the tone for the entire district. And that's very critical. As Stephen said, critical in our infrastructure, our buildings, our grounds are in need of work. I think the school board has to be a funding for the state.
Great, thank you so much. Tom, you're going to want to make sure that you stay close to your microphone on your computer because you were fading in and out a little bit. Kenan Sanderson, you're up next.
Thanks, Michelle. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay, cool. Hi, my name is Kenan Sanderson. To answer the first question of why I'm running for school board, Ketchikan School Board, is because I feel like it can be a valuable asset to addressing a number of issues that are facing our school board today. And I have a big laundry list of all the things that I would like to address if I'm fortunate enough to be elected into this position, but I think I'll just go over a couple of them. And part of it too is because I think they'll be addressed in other questions later. First and foremost, I grew up here in Ketchikan, born and raised here. I went through Houtling Elementary, went through Schoenbar Middle School, and went through Ketchikan High School here. And one of the things that was super valuable to me while growing up here, which wasn't all that long ago, I'm definitely the youngest candidate on this list by far. I believe I'm only 24 years old. I graduated in Ketchikan High School in 2015. But one of the things that was really important for me was that without the school district, I don't think I would have had any sort of opportunity to grow or enhance any of my skills I have acquired today. I played basketball my entire time when I was growing up through Schoenbar in high school. I was a part of a number of different clubs and activities also in high school and middle school. And I think those things, along with particular classes that are offered at every level, should be encouraged and enhanced in any way possible. That's kind of the biggest thing that I'm looking at right now. Another thing that I really like to address too, and it's been said before by Allie, is I believe in my heart that there should be more cultural infusion within our school district at every single level, whether it's the students, the teachers, the faculty, the superintendent, even the school board. There should be more cultural infusion in a bunch of different ways. And I believe I have a lot of different ideas on how to make that happen. I think I'll leave it at that. I don't want to take too much more time, but yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. For our next set of questions, you'll have 2 minutes to answer. And this time we'll start with Stephen Bradford. And the question is, what is the best way to address differences of opinion between board members or between the board and the superintendent?
I think the president of the school board plays an awfully important role in setting the tone on communication between school board members, but also with the superintendent. I'm a pretty strong believer that whether it's an assembly with a mayor or a school board with its president, that questions and discussions should generally be routed through the head of the body, in this case, the school board president. That gives the school board president the opportunity to understand what issues are important and that we're asking school staff to dig into and research and all. We want to keep a handle on that and make sure that we don't create too much of a burden on staff solely for the benefit of one school board member. So I think it's important to coordinate all that. Having said that, however, it's very important also that a school board member does have direct access to a superintendent and have the ability to go to that superintendent and ask questions, as well as be able to go into the buildings and talk to principals and teachers. We cannot sit up on an ivory tower and think we know what's going on. I prided myself in my previous service on the school board of going to each of the schools and spending time in classrooms and having lunches there at the schools. And I think that's an important thing to do for a school board member. So you get different viewpoints and you're not always getting the opinion of the same old group of folks. I also think it's very important that we ask the citizens to come and express their opinions to the school board. And once again, that school board president plays an important role there in making everyone feel like they can comfortably come forward. Michelle, you did such a good job with that when you were school board president. Everyone could come up and expressed their opinion, even if it was going to be contrary to your own, you made them feel welcome. And I think that's an important role for the school board to play. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next up, Allie Ginter.
Can you repeat the question? I'm so sorry.
Sure, no worries. What is the best way to address differences of opinion between board members or between the board and the superintendent?
Respectfully and with communication and transparency. I know there's been a lot of difference of opinions, especially within COVID. And I feel like the board has handled it really respectfully. I know as a parent, there were certain board members that I felt comfortable going to and expressing my opinion, and there were others where we felt pretty ignored. So with openness and transparency and respect. Thank you.
Great. Next up, Tom Hewitt.
Allie put it well, respectfully. In assuming good intent, in any kind of communication on the board, we need to assume good intent on part of people we disagree with. And, the Ketchikan Daily News had a great editorial the other day where they said, the most successful officials here bring more than just a set of viewpoints. They're able to talk to learn, to talk to a wide variety of the community, and to, when you disagree with somebody, you just need to assume good intent. And listening, not every decision is going to make everybody happy. And that's where a dialogue where we respect each other's viewpoints, where we listen and we look for common ground, the overlap between that. For instance, with COVID was, we all want to keep the schools open. And so that's my approach.
Great, thank you so much. Keenan Sanderson.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm gonna answer this question through speaking from previous experiences that I have. I'm a former emerging leader for the Central Council of Klinkin-Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, the largest tribe in the state of Alaska. And I'm also, was elected as the vice chair as the Ketchikan Klinkin-Haida Community Council. And speaking from experience, that everybody isn't always going to agree on every single topic that we go over. Some are going to be definitely easier than others. And especially right now, there's going to be some topics that aren't going to be, there's going to be a big, or potentially a big divergence in opinions when talking about stuff currently going on in our school district. And personally, for me, I think it's just, I think Tom said it first, is that we have to go in with the understanding that there's going to be good intent for everybody in our community, especially our children. And the bottom line, everything that we do on this board is going to be for the protection and the enhancement of education for our students. So that being said, just having an open mind and understanding that whatever decisions being made is going to be for the betterment of our community is just what needs to be understood. So I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicole Anderson.
Yes, thank you. So I really think the best way to address differences of opinion between board members and the superintendent, really a lot of people have already touched base on that, is respectfully. You can't go into a conversation and think that your opinion is the only opinion that matters. And that's really important, whether you're a board member or just a person along the street. You have to recognize that there are a lot of opinions and some people feel very strongly on certain topics, and you have to go into things with an open mind and recognize that there are going to be times that somebody may be able to change your opinion. It's not all black and white. There are gray areas, and that's where opinions really can sway somebody. So I think when you have a difference of opinion, if you speak respectfully to whomever it is you're speaking with, It can make a world of difference. And that's where you are going to come together and collaborate and work well as a team, is when you can respectfully acknowledge that others have very valid thoughts and opinions as well. So I agree and echo what a lot of others have said, is go into it with an open mind and just be willing to listen and be available to listen. So thank you.
Thank you. For this next question, we'll be starting with Allie Ginter. And the question is, what critical issues do you think need to be addressed in the academic programs and offerings? What changes would you recommend?
What changes? Well, I mentioned earlier about the introducing our culture, you know, Native culture into the curriculum. Last year, I had been talking to one of the teachers at K-High, and I don't know if it's still true. We only had one language available, and that was Spanish, because Madam Zed, the French teacher, had retired. So I believe if that's still the case, that's something that we should absolutely be talking about to get our high school students back on the path of having one or the other. I know it used to be a required credit. And if there's only one teacher and only one class available, I don't know what that's doing to their credits. That's all I can think of at the moment. But I'm always open to listening to other people's opinions on what can be improved and what can change. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Tom?
So, yeah, you know, the academic curriculum is... I prefer to leave that some of the details of that up to our experts in the district, our curriculum staff. There are, you know, and really it kind of highlights the role of the school board as not digging too deep into micromanage what's being done, what's being taught. I think a lot of us come in with pretty strong ideas about that. I know I did. As I mentioned, I've kind of, you know, the academic side of things is always an interest for me. I would say, you know, Ms. Ginter's suggestion about language, for instance, is very concerning to me. But there's, you know, do we have the resources, and how do we prioritize things given our existing resources? I think they're doing a pretty good job. You know, academics, I think, are really important, even if whether you're going to be a philosopher or a mechanic. I think we all need these things to balance us, to make good decisions and be good citizens. The Native culture is, you know, it's a big part of our community, and I would agree that that should be an emphasis for our programs as well. Thanks.
Great, thank you so much. Keenan?
So this is a topic that I, you know, really hold near and dear to my heart. I know that one of the biggest issues facing academics in Ketchikan right now, and it has in my experience since I grew up in this school district, is that it feels like there isn't a whole lot of financial support to support different programs that are going on within the school district, whether that is programs in elementary school, middle school, or high school. And especially at the high school level, I feel like there's, especially for like extracurricular activities like ACDC and drama and debate, and ocean sciences bowl. I don't know, I'm not entirely sure where that has come from, but I know that is an issue that has been going on in the past with all those types of programs. I know in terms of academics, and we've all touched on it plenty of times, is a cultural infusion. And that's something I can talk on and on about for a really long time. But that's something that I, again, want to address when coming in, if I am fortunate to come into this position. Another thing too, is that in terms of new academics, I feel like that should be implemented in the school district. And it deals with having a term that me and one of my coworkers have, is having something called a love of place for our home community. And a lot of it has to deal with loving and knowing the area around you, whether that's, you know, knowing the physical geography or knowing the resources that are available to us on the animal or plant level. I feel like introducing more programs such as those will enhance our students' experience while they're going through school, because if they learn, if they're learning something that is going on in their community, they're going to be more in they're going to be more likely to learn about other things as well. So I think that's my time, but thank you.
Great, thank you, Keenan. Nicole?
Yes, so there's quite a few critical issues that really need to be addressed through our academics. One that I see as kind of a stepping stone that will be played upon going through a child's educational career is reading proficiency by grade three. I think that across the nation, I don't think it's just a Ketchikan issue, but I think across the nation that needs to be addressed because that is the building blocks. If they're struggling to read in third grade, moving forward, it's going to continue to be a struggle for them and create a disconnect in education. So I think that that is a very critical aspect that needs to be focused on. Another thing that I'd like to see is recognizing that not all paths forward lead to a college degree. There are a lot of trade positions that are wonderful career opportunities, opportunities that give them options to be their own boss even. And I think that a lot of times the path forward is only seen as college. And I think we need to recognize those trade opportunities and maybe make those available. I know we've got some welding classes and other things that are available here in Ketchikan, but maybe seeing that in the high school would encourage some of those students that don't necessarily feel that they're cut out for college to recognize that they do have great opportunities as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Stephen Bradford.
Thank you. You know, I have a law degree, and among my children, I have a veterinarian, a cardiac arrhythmic specialist, a mechanical engineer, a website developer. So school has obviously been important to me and to my family, but I also have one that has chosen to pursue a career in the trades. And it's important that that individual have just as much opportunity coming through our school district as the others. We've got to be able to provide opportunities for those who don't want to go to that traditional college path, who want to pursue the trades and make a good living and a good life, hopefully right here in Ketchikan, pursuing that aspect. So I think our curriculum is very important. It needs to be well-rounded. We need to have the opportunities for those who want to excel, who want to pursue those honors courses or those heavy STEM courses. I think it's important that we also offer a wide range of the other opportunities in English and reading arts and the like. But we also need to expose our kids to the trades. You know, historically, Ketchikan has done such a good job of that with its airplane ground school and some other, and its fishing courses. And so we've been unique in that aspect. And I certainly want to see those opportunities continue, because I think it's important to expose our children to a lot of different opportunities. More and more in this world, there's not one path that a person should step onto and pursue for a long time. They're going to have lots of opportunities to go different directions, and we need to prepare our kids to be able to function no matter which path they choose.
Great. Thank you, everyone. We'll move on to the next question, and this time we'll start with Tom. The question is, what should the district do to support the social, emotional, and mental health needs of students during and emerging from the pandemic? And what about the staff and teachers?
We do a lot already. You know, that was the kind of key lesson learned that came out of when we shut down schools as a precaution early on in the pandemic, that our schools don't just provide academic instruction for our kids. Provide a safe place for kids who are from tough homes. We provide, you know, we have a group of outstanding adults modeling behavior and social interaction for the kids. We provide meals for kids who may not get them at home as much as they need, or if they're experiencing food insecurity. We've counseling and for kids with disabilities, helping them to integrate into society. There's so much we do. Helping the teachers, helping the faculty and the staff, that's been a big priority for me, is being supportive of our district employees, of our teachers, administrators, paras, support staff. What can we do? Well, providing a safe space for I think on the teacher level, on the adult level, it's really important to have a non-toxic environment where people are heard, where people have input, where people don't feel afraid to speak up if there is a problem. So that's very important. We need to 100% coming out of this. I think the question included the phrase coming out of this. Oh, I'm out of time. Thanks.
All righty. Keenan.
I'm really, really glad that this question was asked on this forum, because I've been getting this question by a lot of different people of all different ages about how we're going to be addressing behavior health, especially after the pandemic, or even still during the pandemic. One thing that I really want to address first and foremost is, and I haven't confirmed this yet, but supposedly there is a behavior health counselor specific to addressing issues that students have within at least the high school. There might be a couple others confirmed that yet, but assuming that this person does exist and they have their specific job is to help with, you know, helping children through difficult times. There is a lot of students out there at the high school level who do not know that this person exists. I have a lot of siblings, I have a lot of cousins, I have family friends that have students who have children in high school. And I work with the ocean sciences team all the time, and none of the people that I have talked to know that this person exists, which is a problem. You know, we're talking, you know, upwards of 30 to 40 students have no idea that this behavioral health counselor exists. So just I guess to address this in a short amount of time, we really need to advertise and promote all the resources that we have already, because it seems that something isn't working. Whether it's whatever the reason that may be, you know, it doesn't really matter. The point is that it needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed now. So I'd really love to talk more about this topic, but I don't really have that much time. So, but that is the one thing that is a big glaring issue to me right this second. So thank you.
Thank you. Nicole?
Apologies. Would you mind repeating the question for me?
Sure. What should the district do to support the social, emotional, and mental health needs of students during and emerging from the pandemic? And what about staff and teachers?
So I think that students need to have access to counseling at all levels of the school district, whether that be in middle school elementary or the secondary levels. Being able to meet that social, emotional, we're not just educating our students, we're teaching them how to function and how to cope with things that are going to happen in their life. And I think that having some of that counseling services available would be helpful at all levels. I know I've heard that getting into counseling in the community is darn near impossible. And so if that's something that were available to students through the school district, that would definitely be helpful to them. But it's something that is all around. I mean, we're seeing behavioral issues because of what we're experiencing with the pandemic, and it does need to be addressed. Unfortunately, I don't know the solution to that.
Great. Thank you very much. Stephen Bradford.
Well, I would like to applaud whoever wrote that question for including teachers and staff, because that is so vitally important. You know, as I look back on the schooling of my children, probably one of the worst years we had was when one of my daughters was in grade school and her teacher was going through a particularly difficult divorce. And that whole school year was a disaster for my daughter and hence for the rest of us in the household. She had a horrible year. And it really emphasized to me the impact that a teacher can have on their classroom. And so it's vitally important that our teachers take care of their own mental well-being and health. And we as a district need to be attuned to that. I think one of the most important things we can do to help teachers and staff deal with those issues is they need to feel like they're being listened to. When they can bring concerns forward, they need to know that we're concerned about those same concerns and that we're looking for solutions for them. So thank you for bringing up the fact that we also need to take care of our teachers and staff. As for our children coming out of COVID, I think the best thing for our children is going to be as much in-person learning as possible. They need that interaction with their peers and their classmates. They need that interaction with their teachers and staff. And so structuring our responses towards as much in-person learning as possible, I think, is vitally important. And then our district, of course, always needs to be mindful of the signs of bullying. And I think our staff does a good job of looking for those signs and signals, and then taking action to help put a stop to some bullying and to try to alleviate it. So I think our district has been doing a good job. We could always improve, as everyone can. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And finally, Allie.
I think our district has been doing relatively well. Maybe continuing to pull the community and the parent community on what they feel is best for their families. I know, we're not even out of this pandemic yet, but I know as the parent, I appreciate when I see that survey roll through my email and them asking for what I feel my children would benefit from, what my family needs help with. And I know that they've extended the free food program, and I know that's got to be helping a lot of our families and helping to alleviate some of those stresses. But I think the best thing the district can do is continue to listen, continue to respectfully listen and not judge. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Moving on this time, we'll start with Keenan. And the question is, how can the school board better balance the need to provide quality education with the need to respond to taxpayer burden?
That's a pretty big question. Can you repeat it one more time, please? Sorry about that.
Sorry, I had to admit someone into the room. So the question is, how can the school board better balance the need to provide quality education with the need to respond to taxpayer burden?
So I'll answer this the best way that I can. I'll admit there are still some things that I need to brush up on. I have experience with managing budgets, and pretty large budgets at that, with my other positions that I'm involved in. But in terms with trying to balance budget versus academic quality, that's something that I'm going to need to look more into. I do, however, feel, in my opinion, that finances and money should never be the education should always be prioritized before our budget. If that, I don't know if I'm not sure if that's entirely making sense, but I do believe that we need to find some sort of happy medium, but I'll need to do a little bit more research on that. So I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Nicole?
Thank you. That is a tough one. We have to be fiscally responsible with our taxpayers' money, but we also need to recognize that our students are our future and they're the future of this community. If we want a prosperous community, we need to have students who do well and come back to our community and work here and live here. But that is a hard one because we do have funding through our tax rolls. Obviously our property tax funds the schools. And so then we feel accountable to our constituents in that respect. But we do need to recognize that education is a priority and funding shouldn't be a deterrent to providing a quality education to all students across the board in our community. So being able to make that balance is, it's difficult. And I don't know, I'm not gonna pretend to know that all the answers. I've gone through one budget cycle with having been on the board and it was frustrating to be knocked down by the Borough Assembly as far as the funding, but also recognizing that we're getting close to the cap and that makes it very difficult as well. But when we saw that decrease or the change in funding from the borough, we also saw that it meant a world language instructor. Thankfully through the URSA funds, we were able to make some adjustments and keep that position, but it does put a strain on the education of our children when we're faced with budget constraints in that respect.
All right, thank you. Stephen Bradford.
I was a member of the Borough Assembly when the Local Education Fund was established. And through that process, we earmarked all of the local property taxes towards education. One of the reasons for doing that was to allow a school district to know how much revenue they would have in the coming year, because property tax revenues do not change that much year to year. And so it became a tool for helping to project the future and where our budgets could go. And I think it also placed the burden on the school board of if there comes a time when revenues are not going to be enough to accomplish the goals of educating our children, then it's going to be inherent upon the school board to make the case to the property owners and the taxpayers and the voters of this district to go along with an increase in taxes if that should be necessary. Hopefully it will not, but I think it's important that the school board take the lead in that and not simply defer to the Borough Assembly to try and make that case. Working with the Borough Assembly is extremely important. And I think my experience both on the school board and as a Borough Assembly member will be helpful in making those discussions move forward. But it all comes down to proper planning and forecasting, and then setting your priorities and determining what you do want to spend your very limited resources on. I can tell you right now that if the budgets get tight, I'm not going to be one who wants to start cutting into activities and music and the like. I think those are also important to offer to the students of our district. So we need to be able to offer a well-rounded education that's in the best interest of our children.
All right, thank you. Allie?
I won't pretend to know very much about the budget. I do know that we are nearing the cap and we do have COVID funds, but the COVID funds can only, you know, go for so much. I know there are other ways that we can get funding via grants. I know there's the Native Education grant that provides the preschools, several of the preschools in town. I believe there's other programs out there that our district could get on and try to apply for. But at the end of the day, I know there will also have to be cuts. And sitting on the board, they have to be cuts that we all agree with and all can stand behind and not say, well, that's not something I agreed with, but so-and-so agreed with that. But I do believe that before we make any kind of huge cuts to any of our education, that we need to talk to our parent community and the staff community. We have so many brilliant minds in our community that can give any input. We should take that input into consideration before we do any kind of cuts to our budgets. Thank you.
Okay, and finally, Tom.
Yeah, so the funding formula for our schools, we've got a budget, I believe it's about $40 million. And about 75% of that comes from the state. Most of that money comes out of the permanent fund earnings. And then the remainder, most of the remainder comes out of property taxes. And then a small sliver comes out of tobacco, cannabis, and grant money. Tobacco and cannabis taxes and grant money that we get. We do have a responsibility to manage that money fiscally responsibly, obviously. We've got an excellent, great resource we have is our business office. I'll mention Katie Parrott by name. She's done a fantastic job. A couple of years ago, for instance, she found we were in deficit on our health insurance and we needed to pay the borough back. She found $1 million by routing out small little overlaps in redundancies in funding, and made a bunch of small painless cuts that added up to a large amount of money. Having said that, I think we've really cut to the bone. I hope everyone agrees here that we don't have a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in our system, really any. We are cut to the bone, and anything further is cutting bone. We've done a good job of, we've passed audits in the past few years for managing the money well. It's up to us to determine priorities. Thanks.
Okay, great. For this next question, we'll start with Nicole. What are your areas of concern in regards to student achievement in the district?
I'm concerned with grade level reading. There is a standard that students are at proficient grade level by third grade. And I don't know that that's achieved to the extent it could be. I think we could put more resources to making sure that our students are on level by third grade so that they can have success going forward. That I think that's my biggest concern as far as student achievement. And I shouldn't say my biggest concern, but that's where I see everything starting from, I guess I should say. That's the building block. If they're not reading, then they're struggling in other areas as well.
All right, thank you, Stephen.
Certainly at the grade school level, the reading achievement is important. And we also need to make sure that our classroom size is appropriate because our teachers need to be able to have that engagement with each of the students in the classroom to make sure that they are picking up those reading skills, but also those math skills and just those skills of being able to function in a classroom environment are awfully important. And sometimes if we get too crowded in the classroom, if we have too many students per teacher, or the balance of IEP kids is a little bit of out of whack in one particular classroom, then that can impact the ability of those children to absorb those core fundamentals that are so important. So we need to be mindful of classroom size. At the high school level more, I think we need to be careful that we don't eliminate opportunities for anyone. We do have some high achieving students who need to be able to pursue those goals and those honors courses. We don't want to axe those because of budgetary concerns, but we also need to recognize that not every student wants to pursue an honor course and that we need to have lots of other activities and courses that interest all of the students so that they can all find their own level of achievement to prepare them for life. Thank you.
Great, Allie, you're up next.
Reading, of course, as Nicole stated, but another thing that's always played on my mind is our children need to feel safe at school. I mean, I remember sitting in a teacher's classroom and it was in Houtling, and we were learning about Maslow's hierarchy. And a child isn't able to succeed academically unless they feel safe. And I feel like there's so many of our kids right now, especially with the pandemic, that don't even feel safe at school. And I think that is an issue that needs to be addressed and handled. And I mean, if we can make our children feel safe at school again, I think we can start getting back up to the curve and progressing again. Thank you.
Okay, and Tom?
So, yeah, I hear this question phrased in a little more pointed way sometimes, is Alaska schools lead the country in expense, and we trail behind the country in our performance. And the assumption I think a lot of people start is because that's because we're wasteful, we're lazy, whatever. I don't think that's the case at all. As we all know, living in Alaska is very expensive. We need to pay people competitive wages. So that gets the expense part. On the output, the outcomes part, why do we lag behind sometime? Well, Ketchikan does, in most cases, has scored really well. Our schools have scored really well against the state average. And so we're doing a good job. We need to look at what we're doing well and how can we do better. Allie makes a great point about feeling safe in schools. Stephen makes a very good point about the different levels, I think, but mostly we focus on elementary education for these. I'm very much a 3 R's kind of guy, especially at the elementary level. We need to give our kids critical skills of reading, writing, arithmetic, as they say, because those are the base that you build everything else off of. We do a lot of great stuff in our schools that are beyond that, which is fantastic too, but we need to keep our focus on that. So what do we do well and how do we keep doing it? How do we do it better?
Great, thank you. And Kanan.
Thanks, Michelle. I think I might hit this, it might be similar to some other responses, but I feel like it's a little bit different route than everybody else took. And I'm kind of gonna use my experience again, me growing up through the school district here in Ketchikan. One thing that I really think that it needs to be touched on and promoted a lot is that I feel that there needs to be more programs to not only make our students have, equal opportunity in education, but also equitable opportunity of education. There's a lot of families that in our school district, they don't have a whole lot of money. They don't have, potentially the best, home lives. And I can speak from experience from that. My family didn't grow up with a lot of money. My family did grow up with a lot of domestic violence and in some aspects, even sexual assault. And that's hard for us growing up in this school district. And I feel like there's not a whole lot of opportunities outside of the 8 to 2:30 day where students can really focus on trying to, increase their mental health better. And whether that's, sometimes there's like a once a semester or maybe even a once a year assembly that might address it. But I feel like there needs to be more opportunities on a weekly, if not daily basis to address issues, because if these students are not safe or if they don't feel comfortable in the school, they're not gonna be able to retain any information, regardless of whatever they're learning. So bottom line, mental health is academic health.
Okay, so we have our final question. And in the last couple of years, we've taken to doing what we call a quick hit question. So this is fast and dirty, and you only have 1 minute to answer. We'll start with Stephen Bradford. And the question is, normally we'd say, tell us why we should elect you, but do that by specifically describing one personal quality that you would bring to the board that would be a positive influence.
Well, I think my background in education helps me understand the process, but most important, I think my experience having served 5 years on the school board previously and 3 years on the borough assembly would be helpful as our school district navigates some upcoming difficult issues that are going to be going to need to be resolved for the long-term health of our district.
Thank you, Allie.
I'm a mother of four children that will be in this district, and I'm approachable. So a big part of being on the school board is being able to be approached by the public and by this school district staff. So I think being approachable and respectful is a pretty good quality to bring to the board.
Great, thank you. Tom?
I would say the being open-minded, being a good listener, my experience, not nearly as much as Mr. Bradford here, for instance, but experience on the board, and the fact that I don't have any, I'm doing this out of a sense of service to the community. I have no political ambitions. I couldn't even run for partisan position because I'm a federal employee.
Very interesting. Thank you. Moving on to Keenan.
So I could probably address a lot of different things, but I think the biggest quality that I bring, that I can bring to the school board, is that I believe in my ability to be able to relate a lot to the student body here in Ketchikan. Like I said, I'm only 24 years old. It's only been 5-6 years since I graduated Ketchikan High School. And you know, it just feels like yesterday since I was walking to all my different classes, like oceanography and English and maritime and all this other stuff. And even before that, it still doesn't feel like all that long since I've been in middle school and elementary school. I'm just an adult now, and I have a lot of ambition to be able to support our education here in Ketchikan and do what I can to serve everybody here in town. So thank you.
Great, thank you. And Nicole?
I would have to say my ability to listen with an open mind. I recognize that I have opinions, but others' opinions are just as valid. And I think that being a school board member, we need to be available to listen. And I think that's the biggest one, is giving those staff and students and parents the voice through you, and knowing that I hear what they're saying.
Excellent. Well, thank you all so very much for your time, and certainly thank you for your willingness to serve our community. One last chamber announcement I heard, which reminded me, because I heard one of you mention the word prosperous community. So the Chamber Board is very pleased to announce that this year's gala theme for our celebration of the Stars Gala, which has been moved to November this year, typically it's the end of January, the theme is celebrating our destination. So the theme is Destination Prosperity. And so the nominations for those community awards will be at ketchikanchamber.com in the coming days. So I would encourage you all, if you know outstanding individuals or other people who have served the community, to submit a nomination. It's usually a great event. Thank you again, and have a wonderful day.